Hello and welcome to Plot Trysts.
This is Lane.
This is Meg.
And today we're reviewing The Love Remedy by Elizabeth Everett.
This was just published in 2024 and is the first book in the Damsels of Discovery series.
And full disclosure, we did receive a complimentary ARC for this review.
And it is the first in a series. I think it works okay as the first in a series. However, this is one of those cases where this is the first in a series, but it's very related to the previous series that this author has written.
I think it is fine as the first book in the series. I don't think you are definitely aware there are stories you are not up on, but it didn't detract from the A plot in any way.
Yeah. But if you have read the previous series, then it's kind of like, oh, that's what that couple is up to. Or
yes,
it's a lot easier for you to be like, oh, she goes to Athena's retreat. She had a lab there. So you know what that means without Everett having to explain it to you.
No, it's definitely annoying, I would imagine, if you haven't read the first book, or at least I would be annoyed, but it doesn't impact, there's no prior interaction between the hero and the heroine. So you're not missing anything in their specific dynamic.
Yes. So what you're saying is this is not a Lorraine Heath first in a series.
Right. I didn't feel like there was something I needed to know about the two of them that I wouldn't have known if I just started here.
Yes, exactly. Book jacket?
Sure.
When a Victorian apothecary hires a stoic private investigator to protect her business, they learn there's only one way to treat true love, with a happily ever after.
When Lucinda Peterson's recent perfected formula for a salve to treat croup goes missing, she's certain it's only the latest in a line of misfortunes at the hands of a rival apothecary. Outraged and fearing financial ruin, Lucy turns to private investigator Jonathan Thorne for help. She just didn't expect her champion to be so grumpy.
A single father and an agent at Turney & Company, Thorne accepts missions for a wide variety of employers, from the British government to wronged wives. None have intrigued him so much as the spirited Miss Peterson. As the two work side by side to unmask her scientific saboteur, Lucy slips ever so sweetly under Thorne's battered armor, tempting him to abandon old promises.
With no shortage of suspects, from a hostile political group to an erstwhile suitor, Thorne's investigation becomes a threat to all Lucy holds dear. As the truth unravels around them, the cure to their problems is they must face the future together.
It's a weird last sentence, but
it is. It's a fine jacket overall.
Yes, agreed.
But it is a weird last sentence.
I was just like, that's weird. Kind of weird, but it's okay though. The rest of it is fine. Like, honestly, I think it's a good jacket.
As usual, we generated a number between 1 and 50 and used that randomly generated number as a word count to write our own summaries. This episode, that number is 15. I'll go first. I am 90% sure I have written some variation on this summary before. Woman who has spent life taking care of everyone gets taken care of in bed.
And I mean, I am 100% sure that we've talked about this in an episode. Actually, I'm like 99% sure it was in Mine Till Midnight that we talked about this. About how you're like, I know I shouldn't like this, but I really like this guy who's just like, let me take care of you.
Yeah, like, she doesn't need her intellectual equal. She needs someone who's completely awed by her and wants to take care of her all the time. And it's like, maybe that's problematic. But here I am being fucking trash.
But maybe trash. I don't care.
I'm trash. Meg, what was your summary?
Here's my 15-word summary. Thorne and Lucy are perfect for each other in private. Will Thorne make it public?
I feel like it's the least shocking thing ever in romance novel world. But there is something a little bit Darcy-y about just how judgmental he is. about other people.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe it's just because Colin Firth's shirt from the Pride and Prejudice BBC series is currently up for auction that's fresh on my mind.
I don't know. I mean, whenever we talk about Sunshine Grump, like, Darcy is kind of the quintessential Grump.
Yeah, just that Bennett's not the sunshine.
Yeah. But, and I mean, Lucy is not the sunshine either.
Look, we're not saying Sunshine Grump. We're just saying there's something a little bit, he's judgmental of her that is preventing him from wanting to be. And he's also very closed off, preventing him from wanting to be like open about their feelings for each other.
Yeah. So, tropes.
So he's her hired gun.
I know. I don't, this is another one that I'm like, this is probably problematic, but I just love it.
First of all, it's not quite a bodyguard scenario, but it's not a bodyguard scenario. And that does things. It gets into that like protective mindset, but like she's hired him. So it's not that she's helpless. Yep. Like he is her solution that she's sought out. Chef's kiss.
Yep. I don't know. I love it. I love a, you know, PI, but he has to work for her. I love it.
He's a PI at a business targeting disenfranchised women.
I know.
Leave me here. The fact that the mystery ended up being really lame, we'll talk about later. But for now, know that I admire his business acumen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that he's like, yes, I will work for you for room and board.
And
not even board, just room.
Room and babysitting. And medical care.
I would do it. Forced proximity, because he's staying in her upstairs apartments, like I just said. So.
Yeah.
And I know there's this like argument about forced proximity versus close proximity, but I don't care. They're forced to be together. Fuck it.
There's a lot of things that have very specific terminology, like content warning versus trigger warning, that we just don't bother to be correct about, and I don't feel the need to be correct about this either.
Nope. I'm sorry. It's the lamest thing to be pedantic about a romance novel trope. Sorry to all of our listeners who are like, no, it's close proximity.
Look, when they're in her office at night, they might not be forced to be there, but the magnetic field says otherwise.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's what it is.
The magnetic field. She is a woman who inherited her father's business over a brother.
Yes. And that was interesting. I liked this one.
I did too, but it made me. There's no moment where like they find her dad's will or her dad's letters that shed more light on why he made the decisions he did. And I did find myself wanting that for her, but it was very authentic that she didn't have it.
Yeah. I liked it. We'll talk about this more in the book, but I thought that the whole family relationships were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe frustrating, but you know, that's family shit, you know?
Yeah, I found myself more frustrated at her and her response to the family dynamic than specifically mm-hmm. at the siblings. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I was frustrated all around, but I think that speaks well to Elizabeth Everett's writing mm-hmm. in the fact that she could create this, because I felt like it was a very believable family dynamic that was frustrating for many reasons.
Yes. Like, I'm not defending her siblings' behavior at all. But the response to it was also baffling.
Correct.
Yep. Which is authentic.
Yep.
So he is a fallen aristocrat.
Yes. I was kind of into this.
I wanted more with his backstory, but I was very into the idea of it.
Yes. I mean, I would not, this was on the shorter side, I feel like, for a book. So there would have been room to delve into it, but I wasn't frustrated with it. I was more intrigued by what wasn't there.
Agree, but intrigue means you're just never going to get the answers by virtue of the way that the romance novels work.
It's true. Unless you know, there's something from his daughter's perspective later, like second generation or something, but.
Right. So I just, like, there was a lot of imagining and filling in the blanks with some of his backstory as a reader, which is not inherently terrible, but I wouldn't have minded a little bit more being explicit.
Yeah, agreed.
Both have daddy issues.
They do both have daddy issues for different reasons.
Yes.
So I thought they were, again, I feel like they were complex daddy issues.
They were. So as we've discussed, her dad leaves her this business and she sort of doesn't quite understand why. And things have not been easy since her parents' passing, not only because they died of the cholera, but also just supporting themselves has not been simple. Because she's got a brother and a sister who are also sort of involved in the business, but also pursuing their own passions. He's the illegitimate son of an aristocrat. His family, it seems like it was equal parts. He was the black sheep and ran away, and his family sort of cut him off out of embarrassment when he became a boxer. Mm-hmm. And then he has this little illegitimate daughter, and it causes his parents to draw a firm line in the sand of, like, if you are going to be her dad, you're dead to us, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he had a really complicated relationship with both of his parents and with his siblings. And that's the part that was a little thin, but he definitely has a lot of baggage and, like, could very much use therapy over his family dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, it's a trope. Lucy and her family are helping the poor in St. Giles.
It's absolutely a trope, especially when they're providing women's services. And
correct.
Winter Makepeace would be proud.
Winter Makepeace would be so proud. Aww. It's true. Okay. Let's talk about this book. We have talked in the past about how across the aisle romances don't really interest us, right?
Like political aisle. Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes. Like political, like conservative woman, liberal man, or vice versa is just not interesting to us.
Because this was like, if this is a little bit of a class conflict book, my brain got confused. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No problem. I feel like this is like slightly across the aisle, but it's not like a political difference, it made it work for me. Basically. So they don't actually have different ideals, right? They don't have like differing ideas about human rights or like who's important, right?
Right.
Thorne just has never really examined his preconceived notions. And
Thorne's a fucking guy who's never had to deal with this shit as a man.
Exactly. And his relationship with Lucy and his relationship with his former mistress as well, I think, have made him start to question the way he was raised and certain things about his life. And for that reason, this worked for me.
I agree that worked for me. Like, her educating him, she didn't have to do all the work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, she had to explain some things like he was three in ways that annoyed the shit out of me, but then he took on the responsibility of continuing to educate himself.
Yes. And also, she did not have to compromise her ideals. Like, this is not a book where, oh, let's both give a little, right?
Yeah.
This is a book where he's like, oh, I have been wrong about many things in my life, and Lucy is right about basically all of them.
Yes.
So I liked it. I liked that part.
Look, I'm gonna love any book where a guy figures out his own shit.
Yep, exactly. I really do feel like Elizabeth Everett's books are getting better and better in this way. And I liked it a lot.
So I was a little bit annoyed by his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to trade off like the things I don't like compliment sandwich situation.
Yeah. So just talk about his daughter.
She's like 8 or 9, extremely precocious, and like trying to do right by her, both as, you know, the parent of a biracial child, but also of a little girl in this era, is like a major part of his character. And she is very on the page because of that. And I did find her very annoying.
Yes. So this, but this is more of a, you just don't like kids in your romances, right?
Sure. But sometimes they're there and even I'm like, eh, it was fine. She was very present and annoyed me.
She was very present. I guess trope, like matchmaking daughter. Right. So like that was in there. Part of the reason that he falls for Lucy is because of the way she treats his daughter. I mean, there's a lot of kid stuff for sure.
Yes. So just putting it out there, I don't think it was done poorly, but I can always do without it.
Yeah. Should we talk about the family dynamics? Because this is both like a compliment sandwich and also something that frustrated us, like in a good way. So family dynamics, she is the oldest sibling. She's the one who's inherited the business from her father. She's the one who actually, she and her sister are both apothecaries. And her brother did not inherit the business. So Lucy feels this extreme responsibility for her family. She's like, I'm the one who has the business. I need to take care of them. And they are both younger siblings and they are kind of jerks.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not going to go into great detail about what they do, but what they do is they are trying to better their own circumstances by not telling her about what they're doing. So she is like super anxious about making sure that the business is a success and making sure that she can continue to feed her family and support them. And they're just like super resentful of her and don't tell her what the heck they're trying to do to help out the family themselves. Because they also are like, well, we're going to help out the family in these other ways. I guess this is kind of a miscommunication trope, but between the siblings, right? Like if this was between the romantic interests, I would be so not into the conflict.
I think it's a little bit too deliberately hiding something to just be miscommunication.
I mean, I think part of it is that she's not telling them how anxious and stressed out she is about like taking care of them.
Right.
And they are not telling her like how frustrated they are that she's not letting them live their own lives. In their opinion.
The way that they all behave as a result of those feelings is fucking insane.
Yeah, yes, it is. Lucy is the least insane of the three of them. Her brother and sister, I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Correct. And I want to be very clear. Lucy's not sane. Lucy's not behaving rationally. And yet we want to defend her for being the most rational. Really says more about her siblings than about her.
Mm-hmm. And then when she finds out what her siblings have done, she just like part of it. Okay, I thought this was really actually kind of a genius move on Elizabeth Everett's part. Because Thorne is like, oh my God, can you believe what they have done? Like, you really have been treated like shit by your brother and sister. Right? Like, he doesn't say it in so many words, but he's like, hey, maybe you should examine these relationships. And because she's so annoyed at him, she forgives them like very quickly.
It was a choice.
It was a choice. Like it worked. I was frustrated with all of them, but it worked for me because it felt authentically like something Lucy would do, if that makes sense.
I don't know which one of her siblings I hated more.
Yeah.
I think the spoiler.
I mean, I know which one I hated more.
Her brother's decisions were like really shitty toward a business and more longstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister's whole viewpoint toward Lucy's personal life and behavior was so fully insane.
I hated her sister more. Like, I knew. I can tell you. It was the sister that I hated.
And they all acted like the sister's transgression was less of a big deal. And I was like, but excuse me.
No. Absolutely not. No.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy because I'm sitting here like, how the fuck did she forgive her sister?
You are not crazy. I have no idea.
Did an okay thing in a really shitty way.
Yes. Yes.
Her sister did a shitty thing in a shitty way.
Yep. With like the worst justification I've ever heard for anything.
And involving like a really bad person.
Yep. It was horrible. Ugh,
anyway.
It was terrible.
All right, but here's the thing I want to, like, within that same viewpoint, Lucy, as you said, is so stressed out, and she's not telling anyone how stressed out she is. And one of the things that I really liked is there's this moment where she's, like, having a full panic attack about, like, what is going on with the money, what is going on with her patents. Like, she recognizes that her siblings are not necessarily happy with the amount of effort it takes to keep the apothecary open. And she literally thinks, like, what is upsetting me this much? Because we are not going to be like poor and destitute and like on our own struggling on the streets if we decide to close the apothecary. Like, she's not even sure that like this truly is her dream in the way it's manifesting. She's just desperate to keep it running.
Yeah.
Reason she can't fully articulate it. And I really liked the, like, seed of that idea, and I kind of wish it had been a stronger through line to the end of the book. Because I thought it was a really fascinating thing to have, like, because so often we talk about romance heroines in particular in truly dire straits. And she feels like this is dire in that there's so much going on that's out of her control, and she is so overwhelmed. But the fact that she still has the perspective of, like, this is not life and death. I like was really novel, and I think I was disappointed that that wasn't explored further just because I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I liked it too. I liked it a lot. Do you want to talk about humors, Lane?
I do. The number of times a romance novel heroine in particular has been the first person ever to suggest washing hands. Is so many, it cannot be quantified. Like, you see, like, this anachronistically modern thing being implemented in this time in which it was not prevalent because, and like, the tongue-in-cheek reference is always because they're not listening to women.
Right, right, right.
And I thought it was really interesting here that you see what a competent apothecary Lucy is. And you see her developing these things that are actually helping treat symptoms and suppress symptoms. But the actual underlying philosophy of medicine and actually treating diseases is still so based in the four humors and things that we now know are utterly fake. And I found it so interesting to really delve into that.
Yeah.
She is not the originator of germ theory.
No.
She's a good apothecary who is practicing within the confines of the medicine of the time. And I just feel like that's not something we see very often. Like, usually it's the people who still believe in the humors are the quacks who are resisting the smart woman who's figured out derm theory 50 years early.
Right.
And so, like, I just, I really liked the way that played out.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot myself.
I have a thing, and I don't, Meg disagrees with me. But I just, like, I want to put it out there. He is a staunch Methodist. And he is working to raise his daughter, going to church every Sunday. And the woman whose house they lived in prior to living above the apothecary was an extremely pious woman at their church. And he, especially since having his daughter, has made a real attempt to turn his life around. And it seems like religion has, in a lot of ways, like, buttressed his remaining on what he believes to be the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, facing a lot of controversy in the world, specifically from this, like, League of Men Who Hate Independent Women, that are sort of driven by, to use a very modern term of art, Christian hypocrisy. God wants women in the home. God doesn't want women working. You know, even within the confines of the church, to be godly is not to be interested in sciences and all of that stuff. So there's I think, a little bit more religious references in this text than we're used to seeing in romance novels. Mm-hmm. Where basically it pretends religion doesn't exist, even though this was a society where everybody was absolutely going to church every Sunday, which I'm largely comfortable with. Her relationship with God is a lot less explicit and relevant to the text, but she does have a couple of moments where she reflects on the fact that she views most of these men's relationship with Christianity and God as hypocritical. Like, Jesus mm-hmm. would have wanted everyone to take care of people, not condemn those who were different.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be a little bit on the nose in terms of like modern dialogue about, especially like the modern religious right in the United States, and how there's a big subset of like liberal Christians who want to criticize conservative Christianity for misinterpreting God as a bigot, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I think I understand the importance of that role in like community speaking to themselves. As someone who is not Christian, I am very frustrated by that line of dialogue in modern political discourse. And it did read to me as a little bit like explicitly a reference to that here.
Yeah, I mean, I won't, maybe it is. It's not something that stuck out to me at all, like at all. For me, the Thorne's relationship with his religion. So Thorne has decided to be a Methodist, right? Which at the time was out of the norm.
Right.
And to me, it was almost like a metaphor for like Alcoholics Anonymous or something. He really needs this rigid structure, or he feels that he needs this rigid mm-hmm. structure to keep him on the straight and narrow, because before he settled down as a single dad to take care of his daughter, he was, you know, he was a boxer. He would drink to excess. He would gamble. Like he was out of control, basically. Right.
And so, but Methodism has like provided, as you said, the structure, but now not only does he not drink, he doesn't dance.
He doesn't, yeah, right. He doesn't dance. He doesn't listen to music. And it's like, I mean, it's an overcorrection, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it felt real to me in the way that somebody might react in that way.
Sure. No, I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Yeah. So to me, that was how I read it. I was very surprised when Lane sent that. She was like, yeah, didn't you read this part in this way? And I was like, what? No.
To be fair, I don't disagree with your interpretation. I think it can be both. I think he could be turning to religion as a form of like rudimentary therapy and addiction counseling, and she can be thinking about things theologically in a very modern lens.
Yes. Well, what I will say is it did not strike me at all that she even had theological thoughts.
to be completely one of us honest. Is more terminally online than the other.
Which one of us do you think it is?
No idea.
Okay, who gonna be? I wanna end with one thing, and it was that in our first series that Elizabeth Everett wrote, we talked about how we really liked it, but that it could be a little bit depressing sometimes reading about the political aspects that she had put into the romance.
Right.
That. I will say that she continues that sort of league of men's rights activists, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, at least to me, it was not to the extent that it overshadowed the romance in this book.
I agree.
Oh, good. I'm glad we agree on something. content warnings, Lane.
Oh, God. I mean, for all that we just said, this wasn't so depressing it overtook the charming romance. It was still depressing.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. All of the following are explored as a part of the book's progressive politics: abortion, sexual abuse, rape, and prostitution.
Yep.
We mentioned that his daughter is mixed race, so his mistress was Black, and she was seen as Black. I believe she was also mixed race, actually. And he talks there's some exploration of racism, but it doesn't go into great detail, to be completely honest.
And as I mentioned, her parents died of cholera. There are regulars in the shop who are also people sort of more or less subsequent to the death of their family. And she loses patience.
Yes.
And her sister treats extremely sick women, largely prostitutes with small children. But so there is a lot of loss. You see just how high the mortality rate would have been in this era for 1,000 different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Are we done with content warnings?
Yep. I mean, honestly, it's just like all of them. It's all of them.
Yeah. It's most of them, you know.
Oh, I want to add one more. There's a lot of purity culture bullshit being thrust upon her by her ex.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. But let's talk about what I consider one of the strengths of this book, and that's the sex in its name. Let's talk about it, because I was extremely surprised and pleased with the sex in this book. I'll just say that.
Yeah, it was not what I was expecting, but it was what I deserved.
It was what we all deserved?
It was what I deserved.
Okay. I recently read a book where there is a very similar dry hump. Okay. Mm-hmm. What happens in that other book is that they're like, you know, getting hot and heavy, and they like are humping like up against the wall. So like very similar to what happens in this book. And in that book, the female main character gets distracted and like can't really focus on her orgasm. And in that book, the male main character just doesn't kind of realize it and doesn't do anything about it. I was not very happy.
Well, why would you be, Meg?
I don't know. But I seem to be the only person who had that issue with that book. Or at least I was the only person who mentioned it in my actual review. Which, I think we've talked about it. I love being a romance reviewer, because I can just be like, hey, I didn't like the dry hump in this book.
Really, it's a term of art.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, this dry hump is actually very similar to that one, in that like they are getting hot and heavy up against the wall. They're just like humping on each other. And then she's like, oh, look, there's like a cobweb on the ceiling. She just gets distracted and like not into it.
Yeah.
And instead of just like continuing what he's doing, he's like, hey, Lucy, like, what's up? Why are you not into this anymore?
You've gone somewhere.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. And he's like, no, that's not fine. And they take care of it. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I would have liked it regardless. But because I read this in such close proximity with the other book and the other scene that was so similar, I was like, yes, Elizabeth, thank you.
So that was extremely hot. But then he's coping with all of his jealous feelings and not figuring out very well how to deal with her in real life. Yeah. In the bedroom, he has like a sixth fucking sense about what is going to work for her. And this is one of those moments where I was like, I did not know I was into that, but apparently I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a little bit of like light bondage, you know? And it's not even the bondage part. I think it's like the specificity and the caretaking part of it.
And it's just how bossy he got.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just gonna be really honest. That man had a plan. And I was like, you run this show, babe. Thank you.
And the let, so there are like three scenes, right? So, and then the third scene was so good too, Lane.
But
I don't know. This was very sexy and really worked as a, like, for me as a romance couple, right? We've talked about it. We have to like be into the characters to be into the sexiness, right?
Right.
And we were.
No, this was an achievement in that regard. While I may have some quibbles with the way that they existed to each other in, like, in the world with her siblings and with, like, his religious sensibilities, ultimately, the fact that what it came down to was, I'm going to make my decisions with my dick, really worked here.
It did. It did. It was good. I really like this book. I said it earlier in this episode, but I'll say it again. I really do think that Elizabeth Everett is just getting better and better.
Oh, which I makes sense. The hell out of this.
Yeah, the more you write, the better you get, and it was great. It was just so good. I loved it. No, I really, really liked this book.
Balanced book that left me wanting more.
Yes.
And I definitely think that's great strides.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, we recommend this book. You should check it out. It's out now.
Thank you so much for listening.